Hi, I'm Isha.
And I'm Nicole.
And we're Ritual Comun.
Welcome to our podcast, Ritual Comun Conti,
where we believe the human condition has been wounded by our denial of the collective experience.
Listen for my how.
So welcome back to another wonderful episode of Ritual Comun Conti. And today, myself, Misha, and Nicole are here with Karina Robles. And Karina has been so kind to come into today's podcast because we're talking a lot on generational trauma. And she is an associate marriage family therapist. A lot of her work has been in community mental health, servicing the Latinx community by providing therapy services in Spanish for adults, children, adolescents, and families. Karina has also supported English-speaking communities through groups, offering services for survivors and perpetrators of domestic violence, and parenting support. And Karina continues to serve her community with adolescents in the school system and private practice.
And I'm really excited that Karina's here, because when I started to do my practicum at the community center where we were working, Karina was my partner for a group that we were helping out with. And it was the first group that I was going to facilitate, and I couldn't have had a better partner. And it was, I really, really loved that experience. And I always really admired the way that Karina was so empathetic to the group. And you guys probably have a good idea of my personality at this point, in the way that sometimes I'll just say things. And I always remember that you took the time to kind of stop and reflect. And whenever you spoke to somebody, you spoke directly to their emotions. And it was so powerful. And I was just so honored that I was able to see that and to be able to learn, so that I could also pick up on that and implement that in the way that I also interacted with my clients. And just that the group that we were facilitating was just so much fun. They were just an amazing group of people, and it was lovely to see them grow. So yes, thank you, Karina, for doing this with us.
Yay! Thank you for having me, and thank you for that intro. And it was great to be in that group with you, Nicole, and our group members. We still miss them. We were talking about them a couple of weeks ago, but it was really good work, really fun work.
So if you can give us a little more information about how you started to work with the Latinx community. It's something that for a lot of people just happens by default. You know, there's a Spanish-speaking therapist, and all of a sudden your whole caseload is in Spanish because there's not that many of us.
Right.
But it sounds like it was something that you wanted to do. And so what kind of pulled you towards that realm?
Yeah, so for me, I think it was definitely a combination of being Latina. My parents immigrated to this country from El Salvador. So growing up with our family, friends, being very involved in a Spanish-speaking community with people from all over different Latin American countries. So I think that was a main thing. And as I got older, I noticed that there was a need within my community for more information, for resources, for having access to these resources. And I didn't know at the time what I wanted to do, but it was around like my early 20s where I decided I want to do something that helps the Latinx community, but I don't know what. And then in undergrad, I found marriage and family therapy, fell in love with the field, the idea of it, and then I went into it. But my plan was always to give back and do therapy in English as well, but my main focus was Spanish speaking services for our community.
Yeah, that's so awesome that you were able to like sort of streamline kind of where your best services were going to be implemented, and you were able to like find exactly what you needed to start to do that so quickly. I know that a lot of people, it takes them a long time to figure out, even from like finishing school, like where you're going. And I think with therapy especially, it's different because a lot of you guys go into it and it's like immediately you go into being an associate and somebody that starts to help maybe somebody else who's licensed. And so you just immediately like delve yourselves into it and you figure out where you're going to fall, but the fact that you fell into a place that you like, I think that's really, really amazing and really important, actually, for the development of your own career and for others that you're able to help, because I'm sure you help a lot of people who really need the help. I'm sure, like, you're staying there because it's there, like the help is needed there. So,
yes. And I love that in our time today, more people from the Latinx community are open to therapy. I think it's been stigmatized for so long. And to see that, I was seeing people in their 50s, 60s, and saying, this is my first time in therapy, but I know that I need help. I know that I need support. And I don't want to keep living the life the way that I'm living it. So I think that was one of the most awesome moments for me when I did begin to work with the Spanish-speaking community.
That's huge. That's so huge. Well, I was going to like kind of lead this into something that I've been really curious about, because with what we were all talking about before in terms of like this whole podcast series is generational trauma, mm-hmm. and seeing how directly influenced by that you can, like, you are like the inside viewer of what it looks like real time in someone's physical life when you have had generational trauma affect you, and you know, you've spread it to your children, like the things, the pain of the past that you haven't come into. And I know you work with families. So I'm wondering, what does it look like in someone when you're healing that? How do we show up in the world? Like, how do the people that come into your space and then have been able to heal that or tell you, like, yeah, I've realized these things, how does that make someone show up in the world?
Yes. And I think it comes from a place where first we start to acknowledge that something is off in our community. I identify with the Latinx community, and I think it, at least for my experience, I don't want to talk in behalf of everyone, but it's, we're taught to kind of solve our own problems and keep everything in the home. And if you're going through a tough time, you don't share that. You're supposed to be strong, and that's your badge of honor. So I think it begins with acknowledgement that doesn't have to be that way, and that, okay, what else is there? Because this isn't working for me. Like, carrying all of this load isn't working for me. Sometimes even I've worked with many female clients in maybe 40s, 50s, and something that they really carried was the rigid gender roles. And they would tell me, I know I should be grateful that I get to serve my husband and my kids, but I want to do something for me too. And I think that's where the healing starts, when we begin to ask those questions, like, what else is there out there? Because I've been doing this for so long, but it isn't really working for me anymore.
Can you talk a little bit more on what you just talked about right now with those rigid gender roles? I think that this also has to do with generational trauma, and I'm sure you've explored it, mm-hmm. like where it's coming from, why. I think this is so fascinating, because this really is, and I said this to you before, but one of the biggest concerns I hear from even clients that come to us that are mothers are, I just work all the time. I have no time for myself. I'm just doing all these things for my family and nothing for myself. I would really love for you to speak a little bit on that.
Something that comes up a lot is the idea that as women, we have to be all of the things, but also submissive, also perfect at every role. You have to be the perfect daughter, the perfect wife, the perfect mother, and carrying all of that pressure. So with the clients I was seeing a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, and a challenge in thriving, because they were so, I don't want to say stuck, but expectations were so ingrained in them that it was hard to take those first steps to make shifts. And a pattern that I noticed was that, especially in the mothers that were older, their children were already adults, and mothers still felt this pressure and expectation that they had to meet their adult children's needs as well. And it was so funny, but not funny, in the way that in therapy, sometimes they would fantasize about being able to go on walks or being able to, quiero irme un día, todo el día a la calle y olvidarme de todo y solo divertirme, like, which means I just want to go out, have fun, forget about everything. And those were their fantasies in therapy, but just knowing how ingrained these expectations have been for them.
Yeah. And I think that's so interesting that you say that, like, they just fantasized about having a day where they could just go out and have fun and be themselves. And something else that I kind of noticed when I was seeing clients, I also saw quite a few ladies that were middle-aged, was this exacerbation that happens with the cultural shift, especially within immigrants. The gender roles that we have are so, in some ways, more achievable in our home countries, where the mom is expected to stay home, but she also has a whole community. Mm-hmm. You know, she has the aunts and the sisters and the neighbors and la fulanita and the church, and like everybody kind of knows each other. So even though you are at home fulfilling your role as an amazing mother, you also have a whole village behind you, basically, mm-hmm. where you have other roles that are fulfilling you in different ways. And even seeing in my own family, you know, seeing the way that women have a lot of connections, and it's really easy for them, once their children kind of leave the home, for them to then get involved in other areas. And here it's really difficult because, one, the mom might be working, so she already feels guilty that she has to split her time mm-hmm. between work and her children, but also that there is not a big sense of community, not in the same way that they understand community to be in their home countries. And so there's this like isolation of, well, I can't really do that because no one's going to go with me. My husband doesn't want to go, or he can't because he's working all the time, or I don't really have a lot of friends, and the ones that I do are working or they have younger children. So there's this real deep sense of isolation that happens that I think make these issues more prevalent and less functional in our society. Because I don't want to say, I want to be careful of saying like the aspirations that they have for their gender roles, what was taught to them culturally, is wrong. You know, it's not necessarily wrong. It's just, it doesn't always function.
And I love that point. It's so true. I also like that you mentioned that it's not necessarily wrong, right? And I have gotten that feedback. Like, I really like to cook for my family, but I wish that my family would help me by picking up after themselves. You can see there that there is that connection. I do love what I do, but I don't love every part of it, and I wish I had that help. And for many clients, them saying, it's hard for me to speak up. It's hard for me to use my voice. And that was something that we would often work on, helping clients find their voice.
I wanted to jump in on this part because what you said was so impactful, especially in the spiritual community, in terms of like what the kind of work that I do and when I clear people's energies. Helping to find someone's voice is really important because that means that they, like, even their energy within their own body, like around their throat, would be kind of like stifled. So it would be hard for them to feel like they're going to be heard or to feel like they can assert their voice. And a lot of times I've seen like even physical manifestations of that where, you know, they might have a very little voice, or maybe even when they talk, they put their hands like over their mouths. Like it doesn't have to be just like what you're talking about with specific women. But for me, it's just like clients that come in and have like this sense that I can immediately tell when they're that like part of their body is blocked, and that kind of the part of their psyche is also blocked, because you see like the physical manifestations of that. But a lot of times this comes in, and I've even worked with teenagers where they just don't feel heard. They just don't feel like they can be heard. And it's been so crazy, like the kind of healing work that I've been able to with this specific population, because when I like administer, you know, kind of like either Reiki or whether that be a healing practice to them, and even just like having them hum or having them sing a little bit and like using those practices for themselves, it makes them feel a little bit more secure with their own tone, and their own tone in itself is like impactful because they can hear themselves and they know that their voice is important. That's just sort of like what I've experienced. And I'm curious to know, like with you, because when I work with clients like this, it always stems from generational trauma. Like it's either like a kid who whose parents just don't let them speak, or it's a maybe a woman in her 50s who she comes from maybe a marriage that's not really like healthy, but her mother before her was also in a similar marriage. Like, it stems from all sorts of different phases and people and things, and it really does go into the sense of generational trauma when you're dealing with people who have finally figured something out. Like, I haven't been able to do this for a long time because there was a story that I told myself from before when I used to watch my parents or my grandparents, and this is like what it led me to believe. So I was wondering, with what you see in the people that you work with, how does the healing of that generational wound have an impact on someone's life? Like, what do you see the change in? Like, how do you see that change actually physically and maybe even mentally?
Yeah, and I think it all begins with first the acknowledgement that, like I mentioned earlier, that something isn't working. And it also gives that person their own power back as an individual. When they start healing, they're able to heal as themselves, but they're also able to heal their families, their generations. And they could be both. Like, they don't have to be necessarily just selfish about it, because that comes up a lot, that they feel like, if I do my own work, I'm being selfish. I'm not taking into account my family, my generations. But in reality, it impacts someone's life, because one person can change that lineage of past traumas of in their generations.
Yeah, I think that's so important what you're mentioning, because that does come up a lot. And I don't know if it's even just a cultural thing, but I think for women, this is something that we struggle with, that when we do finally start to invest time in ourselves to change our lives around, or to follow a different journey in our life, there's this guilt of, oh, I should also be doing this, or I am, because I'm doing this, I'm letting someone or something down. And what I noticed that was really transformational with a lot of people was what you were mentioning, the awareness that when they started to change, the way that they saw that reflected amongst the people that they loved, that all of a sudden their relationship with their son or daughter or husband or sister was better, that it was healing, that people were communicating with them differently, and that in turn, the whole dynamic of that system, of that family, was shifting. And it was so empowering to have clients come to that realization. And a lot of the times I would point it out when, you know, you sometimes ask, like, you know, what's been good this week? What happened? And they were celebrating their wins. And I would try to make that connection of, like, do you see how your actions are impacting so many people in a really positive way? And it starts to kind of lessen that guilt and shame that a lot of us feel when we start to do work to heal ourselves.
Yeah, you know what's so funny is that my mom actually has this saying about, like, exactly that, the sense of guilt and why people have guilt. And she calls it Catholic guilt. Every time my grandma says anything about, like, oh, you're going to go and, you know, have fun this weekend? Cool. I'm going to be alone in my house. I don't want to go out to eat. Why don't we just cook here? And my mom would be like, no, but we're all going to go out to a restaurant. Mom, do you want to come with us? And she'll be like, no, I'll just be alone. And my mom is like, more Catholic guilt every time. She's always like, another round of Catholic guilt. Thanks, Mom. It's so funny. Like, she just calls it out, like, every time now. But I think it's one of these things that it can be a cultural thing, because I know a lot of people who did grow up, like, with this sense of you have to serve. Like, your role is to have servitude to your family. You have to serve. You know, you have to unite. You have to be the mother of the family. Like, what your husband wants, you need to offer. What your children need, you need to give. There is a sense of, like, a woman in her role, but I think that doesn't always stem in every culture, because if you look at more like areas that are not so, and I'm going to say it like this seriously, because I think my mom has a point. If you look at areas that are not so Catholic, they don't typically have that subservient role so intensely. Like, I think a lot of Latinos, Latinx community, we have this more ingrained in us because we come from generations of people who have been, like, kind of trained in this mindset.
I want us to kind of be careful, because something that you said, Misha, about a lot of the places where there is more Catholicism that could impact the levels of subservience among some of the people in that culture. And I think that is not always the truth. We often talk about Latin women in this way of being subservient or being not as independent as they should be and this and that. But what I have found, not just in my own family, but talking to others, is that the strength, and something that you mentioned quite a bit, Misha, the strength that is really prevalent in these women is the divine feminine aspect. And it's just that we don't give that much credit to it still. And when we see things that happen that are wrong, you know, like, yes, there is domestic violence in our culture, you know, so yes, maybe a woman is getting hit, but the amount of strength it takes for a human being to be in so much oppression and so much distress and still be able to function and be like a smiling mother to the children and be present takes an incredible amount of strength. And to me, that isn't someone that's being subservient. That's somebody that's trying to help their line survive. And I know that maybe you didn't mean it in that way, but I do want to put that out there because we hear a lot of these stories of how the Latin women or women of collective cultures are just not being treated as well because we're not encouraged to go out into the world and thrive on our own. But I think that there's a lot of strength in a lot of the values that we hold in our communities that we just don't pay that much attention to.
Yeah, I guess to even more so clarify, and I will also mention that there's no fire in a woman like a Latina woman. So let me just state by saying that sentence, I believe 100% to be wholehearted and true. And I think that maybe one of the aspects of the subservientness that I'm talking about is more like an implied role that she must take, even though she's so strong, that's why she can take it. It's almost like most mothers feel, and I think that I've seen this around for all mothers, like all mothers' duty when they become a mother, when they're true to their nature of being a mother, is to protect and nurture their children. Also to like, you know, raise them to be independent and have their own thoughts and just kind of like bring them into their own awareness. And I feel like, especially in Latin communities, like what I've seen and with what you guys are talking about as well, is that as much as there might be a role put onto a woman, like Nicole, what you were talking about with the divine feminine, like to be able to be in that power and understand like the fire in itself that happens, like this almost like this explosive energy to be like, not only am I going to be a mother, a wife, a caretaker, a meal prepper, a, you know, doing everything in my house, having a household, running a household, doing it all, but also I'm also going to be a woman and I'm also going to have my needs and do everything else that entails. And I know what you're saying. It is incredibly strong. So I definitely agree with that. I just think that there's this interesting factor when it comes to the mentality of servitude, because with the Catholic religion specifically, there's a lot of guilt, like within it, like within the doctrine of it. Like there's the martyr and all of this stuff. So that's more like what I'm talking about specifically with these cultures that have this very heavy practice of like servitude, because that is literally how the Bible and the way that you practice and you go to church and you go into this place of servitude to God. And even when you get married in the Catholic religion, you know, you get married in a way where you are getting married to God together. Like you're not getting married together to each other. You are marrying the God within each other. And so you're serving each other as you would God. And that's the reason that, especially like in my family and in other Latino families, we get married through the church, because the idea is not that you're getting married to, you know, a government or a state. It's that you're indoctrinating your marriage through God. So the whole concept of servitude is like completely showered in this, you know, in this culture, especially
really solidify the guilt that comes from there.
I just wanted to like sort of kind of amplify it, because I feel like, yeah, you're right. I don't want anybody to take it the wrong way, because I'm not just pointing out the weaknesses, but I am saying that because of this really strong alliance with the Catholic religion in most Latin countries, we have a grand sense of that this is the way that we have to be because of who we are.
So I want to kind of get to the good part here. This is one of the reasons that we brought Karina, and it's so that we can, we've been talking a lot about the generational trauma and what those wounds look like and how it can affect people and their lives and their families. But we want you to give us a little insight into what that healing work looks like. And you kind of mentioned it, like acknowledging that something's wrong is a big piece. But once you acknowledge, like, where do you go from there? I think a lot of people are in that journey right now that they have acknowledged, like, oh, there might be something that I'm repeating, a pattern that I see in my mom that I'm repeating or in my dad that I'm repeating. But like, now what?
Yeah. Right. Spill the tea. Tell them.
So something about healing versus like breaking down that concept, like, what is it, right? We hear it so often and it's so trendy right now. Like, I'm on a healing journey, which healing journeys are so interesting. But definitely healing is, it consists of restoring, right? Something that has been broken or lost. And yes, acknowledgement, but it's with the noticing, like, something is off. And then now what? And I could speak from my own experience. For me, it was just one day waking up and I had lost my mother to cancer. And 3 years later, it just kind of hit me. And I was like, I'm kind of tired of being angry and bitter and I need to do something about it. And then hence the healing journey and it beginning. And I think it's going to look so different for everyone else. Something that I will say is that if you're new to the healing journey, you really do need a tribe. You do need someone behind you, at least one person. It's really hard to heal on your own, and definitely someone who is safe, not someone that you have a complicated relationship with. And then also something that take into account for me, it was having to let go of the expectations that I felt I had to meet and channeling my own voice and looking within and saying, what do I need? Because clearly just listening and following what I think I have to do or should do isn't working. So channeling your own voice. What do you need at this moment? Writing that down and then thinking, what, asking questions, what steps can I start to take? And it's going to be a journey, and not to put like a sticker on it, right? Like, okay, it's going to be 4 weeks and I'm going to be good. I think healing is a very long process. We're often planting seeds, and the trick is not to give up and be consistent and continue to plant seeds, even if you don't see any growth in the moment, to have that hope that you're going to start seeing that.
I really want to just say thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing your experience, because number one, I'm really sorry that you had to go through that. And number two, I'm so like honored that you were able to share that experience with us to explain how you went through that and like what it took for you, and like kind of being so honest and open to all of us, because it takes so much strength. And there's another thing that I wanted to mention, which is so interesting, because we just published a video on depression, and Nicole talks about losing her father in that video. That was the first time she ever talked about it. And like, she talks about that process, exactly what you just talked about, because like, that is probably the most painful thing that a person can go through, is losing a close loved one like that, whether that be a parent or your sibling. It's just so freaking heavy to even think about. And I feel like the fact that you guys were both able to go through that and coming into a place of healing and understanding that is just, number one, like, it's a light to show the world, like, what is possible, like how transformation and metamorphosis is possible through pain. It's really, really impactful and so important to be talked about. And number two, you were talking about planting seeds, and it's so crazy. We were just talking about that on a podcast today about like, they thought they buried us, but instead they didn't realize we were seeds. It's like every time that we come into an awareness of ourselves, knowing that we are the creators and the blossomers, and we are self-growing and we are revitalizing our own selves. by nurturing each other in our communities, like you were saying, like finding somebody who is safe that you can go through this journey with. Not somebody that's like, maybe they're going to be there one day, maybe not, right? Because it's not going to foster any kind of growth. But just number, like, overall, number 25 million. Thank you, because it's just so important that you were able to share that. And I think people need to hear that. And I guess what I would like to know, in adjacent to all that, how do you foster the vulnerability? Because that is essentially what you're talking about at the root of it all.
Yeah, and I think it's so intertwined with the healing, because for the first, maybe, for sure the first year after my loss, I couldn't even tell people that I lost my mom. And to maybe now I'm 6 years in, and 3 years after she passed, I started doing the work and to be able to express myself. And I think it comes with the healing, but it's also a practice, and it's putting yourself out there. And something that I believe about vulnerability, you don't do it for others. You don't do it to get something in return. You do it for you, to be authentic to yourself and who you are and your own journey. And being vulnerable is, I'm going to say the hard things. I'm going to do the hard things for me.
And having to battle with the expectations that you set for yourself. And thank you for mentioning that, because that's a roadblock that a lot of us hit, especially when you're looking for information on like YouTube or Google or wherever.
Right.
And you start to find like these lists of like the grief cycle or like how to know if you're depressed and all these things. And then you kind of end up going down this horrible rabbit hole where you're like, oh my gosh, not only am I depressed, but I think I have anxiety and I might have attachment issues. And all of a sudden you find yourself with a nice full backpack of issues that you got to sort with. And especially when you're in those moments where you're just not feeling great, it's really hard to even conceive of some of the tips you hear, like journaling and doing this. You're like, I can't write that word down. I don't even want to see it. And being able to have that compassion and vulnerability with yourself to be like, I cannot do that, but I can sit up and go watch a show that's going to make me smile. I can commit to that today. And knowing that that is just enough for you. And another thing you said that I really, really loved was you said channeling your voice. And I really love the way that you put that in words, because what that sounded to me was intuition. And channeling your voice and trusting that, I think it's much more achievable for people than when we think of having to listen and trust your intuition, because that concept for a lot of us is already so far out of our reach, that understanding you have an inner voice. And when you have that inner voice, if you just jot down what that little voice told you, and then look at that and think to yourself, how does this make me feel? Or how can I take steps to get to this? You are starting to work on developing your intuition. So thank you, because I think that's a really great tool for a lot of people to have.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned that, because I think when, as a community, as people, when we're going through a tough time, sometimes our go-to is to Google, right? What do I do to feel better after heartbreak or after loss? And you'll get this, you know, wonderful recipe, and you can follow it to the T and then feel like, okay, this didn't work, right? And nothing wrong with that. I've done that too. But knowing that if you take a moment, and I'm sure Misha, you could jump in after this, but if you take a moment and you sit down just with yourself, be surprised that you have more answers within you than you know. If you allow those answers to come out, that is going to be any article that you find on Google. But to know that you learn to start trusting your voice too.
I will just say this, that when I Googled it, I actually found a video. And it was about why being heartbroken can actually be so physically painful. And it did like correlate your actual muscle of your heart to like the pain of heartbreak and how it strains you because of the stress. And it made a lot of sense to me because I went through a divorce. And when I was just at the tail end of that process of separating into deciding that I needed to get the divorce, I was in so much emotional pain because I had to let go. And when I watched the video, I was like, okay, I get it. But that didn't do anything for me except for now I get why I'm physically in pain. Cool. but I think it's really important because, yeah, that's when Nicole and I, we were both going through those really traumatic things at the same time, me with the divorce and then her losing her father. And we found that one of the things that really helped us, not just sitting with yourself, although that is then I think that's step one of all of it, but almost like when we were able to vibe together to do this, we did a yoga class together, and we talk about this later in another podcast with Durga Dasi, but she was this yoga teacher who specializes in trauma yoga. And so what happened was that we were going through this immense amount of pain. And when we were doing the yoga, we identified where the pain within us lived. And it was crazy to, like, as we were stretching and as we were releasing stuff, just like letting this stuff come out of our bodies. I never even knew that you could store so much pain in your body and like in my own heart, how much pain I felt in my heart and how much like abandonment I had felt from, you know, this relationship that I had to let go of, even moving it all the way back through like what I had felt with my father and the abandonment that I felt there. And it was just such a crazy, visceral experience for me because through that movement and through being with myself and connecting like the feelings in my body, I was able to truly identify all of the pain that I was experiencing and why things felt so freaking intense for me and so heavy. And it really did completely transform me. And that was what brought me closer to my meditative practice and my spiritual sense of like who I was, because from then on, I was like, I need to inner reflect. I need to assess what I'm storing in my body. I don't want to be sick anymore. I don't want to be so heartbroken. I was having like stomach problems, all these things. And like my allergies were, it was so intense that I think that what you were saying about taking that time to just look within yourself, that is, I think, the gold. That is the gold for anybody that's going through generational trauma, who is now experiencing something with heartbreak, who is now going into relationship trauma. Like you're realizing that you have some things going on there. It is something that you really need to stop and just look within. And for you, Karina, I feel like since you're working with so many people, especially people of all ages, you see it the most in terms of this. So what is it about romantic relationships? What's the deal with that? Why does it bring up so much trauma for us all? What do you see when you're doing this kind of work with people?
I think it goes back to vulnerability. Often we don't allow ourselves to be vulnerable. But there's something about romantic relationships where there's this expectation, right? Where we're expected to get emotionally naked. So we do, and we feel very vulnerable and exposed. So when anything doesn't align, maybe the way that we hoped for or expected, our defense mechanisms definitely rise up. And when I say that, it's just the way that the methods we use to protect ourselves. And then often those go-to methods are the way that we learned early on as a child, adolescent, growing up, how conflict was managed. So if the tradition at home growing up was that, you know, we yelled at each other and we went at it and we got physical, it's very likely that we're going to repeat that same pattern in our romantic relationship. But a big factor is that we're seeking so much from that relationship. And I think apart from generational right influences, also a lot of societal and cultural pressures that having a relationship is supposed to be perfect and it's supposed to be the dream and the end goal. So we tend to invest all of our hopes and dreams into this relationship. So when things go south, okay, then I'm bringing in all of this past trauma, right? And then I'm putting it on the table and it's about to explode.
And I think another layer to this is that often the partners that we choose are just the right role. It's like we're casting them without knowing for us to repeat the patterns that we learned in our childhood or in other relationships that helped nurture us and helped us learn how to cope. And so a lot of the times what you hear, what's really, I think, especially with younger people, is this frustration of, I thought he was different or I thought she was different, but it turned out to be the same and it was the same mess and this and that. And people start to either internalize that into thinking, oh, there must be something wrong with me and I'm bringing this out in people, or I keep choosing something wrong. It must be because something is wrong with me. But I always thought this dynamic was really interesting, how different people kind of magnetically just latch on to each other, and they're just the right person that knows how to push those buttons that brings up all the issues that we had ignored or that we weren't aware of for a long time. So how do you work with a client that's like noticing this? Like, what are some tips that you can give us of how to make sense of this situation?
Yeah. And jumping into what you're saying, we tend to go for what's familiar. So keeping that in mind. And when I ask this a lot, who does your partner remind you of? And I often hear, oh, my mom was that way, or my dad was that way. So without knowing it, you're jumping into something that is familiar. And it's not necessarily that it's a bad thing, but I think being aware of the way that we want to go into a relationship. And something I often reiterate, we can never change somebody else. We can only change ourselves and do the work on ourselves and then evaluate, is this a place that I want to be in? If so, then there are aspects of this person that I'm really not vibing with. Can we agree with this person to work through it? And that person says no, which unfortunately often that can be the case. Do I stay and accept it, knowing that me trying to change it isn't going to go anywhere? Or do I decide maybe this isn't the place for me? But the work, something that I really emphasize, is that the work will always be with you first. And people are frustrated because they come in and they want help to change the other person. It's like, no, the work starts with us, right? How we're going to show up in this relationship.
I'm laughing because it reminded me of what a hard time I had working with couples, because what you're saying is absolutely true. You know, there's always one partner that initiates, like, we should go to couples counseling. And at some point, the other partner gives up and it's like, fine. but you know, it's very rare that both partners are like, yes, we want to do this. We want to work on it. There's always a little bit of a disbalance there. And you can see it. You can see that there is a person that's trying to do the work, that's trying to figure it out. And maybe they start to get better. But within couples therapy, it's so hard when you see a partner falling behind and kind of having those conversations of like, hey, are you guys checking in with each other? And that vulnerability piece is so important, because as they start to do the work and things are shifting, they have to be able to tell each other like, hey, you know, I see myself getting better in these ways, but every time I come back to you, I don't feel that way. And it's making me rethink our whole partnership. And it's a really difficult conversation to have. But if it can be had, it has great healing for both partners, because they're getting that, what we call a corrective experience, right? They're getting, they're starting to kind of break the pattern that was going on with their caregivers, with their mom and dad. When they're able to really show up for one another, they're almost resetting that button and moving into a slightly different cycle that can bring a lot of healing.
I think this is so crazy, you guys. I just need to say this out loud to both of you. Is that literally the past 10 minutes of this conversation has mirrored exactly what I just watched last night on the Red Table Talk. I don't know if you guys have seen this episode. I know, Nicole, you don't really watch it, but Red Table Talk with Jada Pinkett Smith, and she literally is there with Justin Baldoni and Wale, the rapper. And they're talking on love and relationship patterns. And everything that you said, Karina, exactly, like verbatim in terms of like coming in and like the partnership mirroring and all of this stuff, like this ideal partnership and how you imagine it to be. And like Wale the rapper was like, I should have the perfect woman. Why can't I have that? I don't understand what's so hard about having the perfect like love. And Justin Baldoni is the star of Jane the Virgin. He was like, no, bro, that's never going to happen. You have to work so hard on yourself first. It was so interesting. And Jada Pinkett Smith was like, yeah. And like trauma is like old wounds, like all your childhood issues, you're bringing it to the table. And all this is so funny. Like literally what we're saying is like the mirroring conversation that they had. And you guys had no idea that this even happened. But I just wanted to say that this is such a reoccurring theme that's been happening in these conversations lately, because people are waking up to it. Right. And I think that that's the whole, that's the whole point. And it's such a beautiful thing that you, Karina and Nicole, can both be in these professions that can help people become so hyper aware of why things don't work. Mm-hmm. And even just to speak to this in my own way, like I remember having all of these relationship problems and going to marriage therapy. Like we went to marriage counseling and then we did individual therapy, all this stuff. And it was so crazy for me because I just kept telling him like, I don't want to have a relationship like my grandparents had where they were married for 50 years, but they didn't really like each other. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have that relationship with you. And like, I don't want to live in a way where I resent, you know, like every day from this moment on, because we couldn't work together. And it was just so hard for us because of so many reasons and more. But I think that ultimately like deciding to separate was the thing that was healthiest for both of us. But just realizing that and the work that it would take to be married, really like I understood that and I understand it still to this day. And like, yeah, like I know that in my own life, I will have that. And when I do get married again, I already know, like I'm willing to do all of that work because I have done so much self-work on myself. Like I know what I'm coming into always. And I know even what I'm carrying from my mom, my dad, my grandma, my grandpa, like I know what's going on because I have so self-analyzed. And sometimes when I'm in my current relationship now, I live with my boyfriend and George always like, he'll ask me like, where's that coming from? Like, why does that bother you so much? And I'm like, gosh, thank you so much. Because you know what? I didn't even realize, but this is coming from this place. And we do that for each other now. And it's so beautiful to come into a relationship that's so synchronistic and like symbiotic. And we really
do. Vulnerable.
Yeah. I'm vulnerable.
And it's so beautiful when both sides are willing to work on the relationship together and want to be on the same page. And we also know that that isn't always the case. And something I wanted to add that came to mind as we're chatting and saying all of this is that often, let's say from our own self-view, it can always seem like the other person is the issue or has areas of growth. But taking a moment to step back and reflect and know that, I wonder if there are areas that I also need to work on and tailor, and maybe I need to be flexible in. So keeping that in mind too, because I think sometimes we have these rose-colored glasses on for our life, like, oh, I'm good. Like, I'm doing the work. I communicate. But maybe there are other things, right, that our partner needs that we're also maybe tuning a quiet ear to. So
yeah. No, being a little bit more flexible. Karina? We're perfect. I'm perfect. Nothing is wrong with me. It's the other person's fault. No, and I think it's so powerful when you finally do have that shift and you realize, like, I can keep blaming the situation or the person, but I have no control over that. The only thing I have control over is like what I'm going to do and think and how I'm going to feel about this. And the changing the feeling about something is really, really hard work. You can understand it, but really, truly making that shift is a whole other thing, which we can get into later. But I'm just kind of curious because a lot of the times people have this misconception that therapists have it all together and they know what's going on. I think when you're working with a client, even though the client doesn't get to know their therapist, there is an exchange of energy and of just that space. So I'm wondering how being in this profession has helped you understand your own healing better.
Well, it has been a fun ride. I think when you're providing some guidance with clients and walking with them ideally and their own pain and their own trauma. And I think in order to do that to the best of your ability, you really do have to hold yourself accountable. And something that I try to practice is hold myself accountable with grace, but also responsible for my own work and my own healing. I think if I don't do the work on myself, it would be hypocritical of me to go into the room and expect my client to do this hard work that is healing, that is ending cycles of generational trauma and patterns of interaction that are unhealthy. So I think this field really makes me hold a mirror to myself every day. And if I don't, when I know that I'm slacking, I know that my own stuff might come up for me when I'm in a session, and that's not fair to my client. So I am a recoverer from tough love. I don't do tough love anymore, but I do hold myself accountable, not with shame, but with patience and grace, but knowing that in order to be the best therapist that I can be, I also have to do my own work. And I have done my work and I continue to do it. And I want to say that I encourage everyone who listens to this podcast to take that moment and challenge yourself to do the work, because it is hard work. I think sometimes we think like healing is so soothing and relaxing and calming, and it's about, you know, sitting and putting out a candle and journaling, and that could be a tool you can use and it's fun, but that really isn't the healing work, and the healing work is hard.
But it's very rewarding, right?
Very rewarding.
Once you start to get through it and then you look back, and this is something that Misha does with me, because I tend to be pretty critical of myself. She like chooses random dates on her calendar. She'll share the calendar and it's like this date that randomly pops up. And it's like, on this date, you were feeling like a 6 or 7. How are you feeling today? And it's like 6 or 7 months later.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun to think, I'm like, what was I doing that year? Like, what was going on? And then to reflect of like, oh my gosh, like this is why I thought that I put myself in the scale, and reflecting, I'm like, oh, I am doing better. And like just having that little moment of being like, oh, you know what? I did pretty good. Or maybe not, you know, it could be the reverse. But I think it's such a fun little tool. What you're saying of, I think when you're in that position with a client and you're helping to facilitate their journey, things come up, because something that maybe a lot of people are not aware of is that when you're doing your work, things might be coming up for your therapist. They just can't voice it, right? Because we're not friends. But believe us, at least this is what should be happening, is that when something does come up, that we owe it to our client as an ethical responsibility, but also to ourselves to explore that and to figure out what's going on. Because otherwise, like you said, we can't really continue to help that person in that journey in the best way, or our best possible capacity, if we don't bring awareness to it. Doesn't mean fix it, but bring awareness to it and check ourselves when we're doing that.
So to all of our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining our conversation with two therapists and myself. So I was in the middle of two therapy sessions just now, and you guys all got to hear it. So thank you all for joining my therapy session. I'm just kidding. But your conversations are so incredibly rewarding to all of us. And I think that we've never had this. We've had Angelica, which is another therapist who was talking about the Latinx community one time before, but we only got into community issues. We haven't gotten into interpersonal issues yet. And having you, Karina, here with Nicole is like, I felt like it was such a fun, like even mental experiment for myself to jump in and be like, I have two therapists at my disposal. Say anything I want. It's so good though, because people can hear the way that you guys think, the way that you guys talk, and it is so very different, really. I mean, when you've studied psychology and when you understand patterns and when you see the process of things and when you're working with clients, it's just so very different. So thank you, Karina, for exposing all of your knowledge and helping people understand these patterns and sharing these life situations that you see can be very helpful, especially with going through something like what we're talking about with generational trauma can be so very, very vulnerable and even so difficult to even begin to where to start, because we go through so much anger until we get to that place of, oh, okay, time for me to focus on maybe something bigger now. And I feel like you really did put it almost like, just start here, just start there. Mm-hmm. Ask these questions, ask yourself these things. It was so nice. And thank you, Nicole, also for joining Karina in this conversation rather than joining me this time, because it was so important for even your take and all the things that you've experienced with your clients. So I want to thank you from the bottom of Ritual Común Conti's heart for both of you to be presented today and helping us come into the awareness of how to begin with all this stuff.
I was just going to say, next episode, it'll be your therapy session.
I love it.
I love it. It's so good. And yeah, Karina, if you do have any resources or any things you'd like to share that can help our members that are listening, we would love for you to go ahead and share them now.
Okay. Off of the top of my head, I wrote a couple of things. If it's too hard to, okay, so journaling for me has been a saving grace. I journal almost every day, and I've been doing it for a long time. But like Nicole was mentioning earlier, sometimes people say like journal and you're like in this dark place and you're like, I'm not going to journal. So write three gratitudes at the beginning of the day. And then if you're writing them at the beginning of the day, focus on the gratitudes for the day before. So we're trying to keep them specific to the present moment, because when we're in a dark place, we feel like nothing is going in our favor. So that's one. And then I just wanted to add two books that have helped me in my own healing journey. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and Boundaries by Henry Cloud and John Townsend.
I have both of those books.
Boundaries is a great book. That one I gave to Misha. I was like, hey,
yes,
check us out.
Totally. And The Untethered Soul. Yeah. Thank you so much for that, Karina. We can't wait for you to expand your journey with all of the things that you're doing in your career. And I just know that from talking to you and from how much love and like passion you have to helping your community, I just want you to know, like, I know that your ancestors are so proud of you. Like, you're really carrying a beautiful legacy for your life. And I really just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Karina. And also, I did want to just put it out there that Karina is practicing. So if you're like, I want her to help me in my healing journey, let us know. And we'll link her stuff down below, too, so that you can get to chatting with Karina if she is accepting clients. I don't know. I might have just put you out there.
You know, there's always openings, so I'm open.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Thank you both for having me.
Join the conversation. Link up with us in any of our forums. If you have any topic ideas, or if you'd like to be part of our show, send us a message in any of our forums.
Make sure to follow us on all of our social medias. We've got a YouTube channel. And for more info, check out our website at ritualcommun.com.
Inhala.
Exhala.
Inhala.
Exhala.
Bye.
Adios.